But first to another election that really counts, we're told, because on Monday, millions of Filipinos will head to the polls to elect a new president. The frontrunner is Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr., the son of ousted dictator Ferdinand Marcos, who ruled the Southeast Asian country from 1965 to 1986, and whose name became synonymous with brutality, theft and corruption. But the latest polling there is showing that a so-called Marcos makeover appears to be working, leaving many people concerned for the state of Philippine democracy. To unravel some of this, I'm joined by a well-known commentator, Richard Hayderian, a Manila-based academic, columnist and policy advisor. And I'm delighted to welcome him back to the show, Richard.
As always, a pleasure, Geraldine.
Look, in a recent piece for Nikkei Asia, you wrote that this is the most consequential election in modern Filipino history. Now, people say this sort of every time. Why is it particularly this time?
Yeah, I mean, everyone is beginning to describe it along those lines, but I think I have the copyright on that. I have called this the most consequential elections in contemporary Philippine history almost a month ago, right? And I've been harping on this issue over and over again. I think the last time the Philippines was in this position was in 1969 when, again, another Marcos was on the ballot. He won that elections. It was an extremely dirty, violent, fraudulent elections. And few years later, that Marcos, the father, was able to declare martial law. And essentially, since then, we have been living in the shadow of the Marcoses. The Marcoses really never left. For a few years, they went into exile after being ousted. But by 1991, they were back and they have been knocking at the door of the Malacanang Presidential Palace since then. And they may finally have their moment to break through. This is the reality we're facing right now. Now, over the past 6 years, we have had a pretty controversial person in charge of that palace. Outgoing President Rodrigo Duterte, a strongman populist. He has undermined the foundations of democracy right and left, but he never had the kind of wherewithal, the kind of discipline. And let's be honest, he's a little bit in an advanced age, so he was not in a position to completely push the Philippine democracy over the cliff. Now, that opportunity can emerge if Marcos wins. Let's not forget the vice presidential race is also said to be dominated by presidential daughter Sara Duterte. So we're not talking about only Marcos, but the Marcos-Duterte tandem. That could be a formidable tandem that could just be right enough to change the constitution in the coming years and create a new political order altogether. So yes, all elections are important, but some elections are more important than the others. And I would say this is the most important one since 1969.
Do you think that the bulk of Filipino people understand this or grasp the sort of gravity of it?
Right. So, I mean, if you look at the polls, it suggests that for the first time, we may have a majority president, right, since the reintroduction of democratic elections in 1987, right, and onwards. So the thing is, that means since still a plurality will not be voting for Marcos Jr., right, a large plurality. The problem is that the opposition has not been able to coalesce around a single charismatic leader. There have been a lot of mistakes and tactical mistakes by the opposition. They have been dithering throughout the years. Vice President Leni Robredo, who was able to defeat actually Ferdinand Marcos Jr. back in 2016, she has not been the kind of decisive leader that people needed her to be until just recently, just in recent months, that we see all these grand rallies coming out, all this endorsement and all. And I always say, why now? Why did you have to wait until the 11th hour? This is brutal politics. This is not a fairy tale story. The proactiveness should have come way earlier, because as time passes by, the voter preferences are going to harden and harden, in this case, in favor of Bongbong Marcos. Not to mention centrist candidates like Isko Moreno, the Manila mayor, also for some reason petered out for not having proper communications, for having fights with both camps at the same time, not in the best way. So we also had our own attempt at having our own Macron, a kind of a centrist charismatic leader. That didn't work out too. So it seems that the ultimate princeling of Philippine politics will be handed the keys to the Malacanang almost on a silver platter. Let me just emphasize this because this is very important. Out of the potentially 50% votes that Marcos is going to get, 60% of that is really from Sara Duterte. Had Sara Duterte, the presidential daughter, decided to run, I think Bongbong Marcos would not have been in this race anymore at all.
So why didn't she?
Marcos will be very, very indebted to the Dutertes for gaining back access to that presidential palace.
But is she necessarily like her father?
Yes and no, right? Yes and no. I mean, if Mark Twain said history doesn't repeat but rhymes, I can also say that, you know, she's similar, she rhymes, but not necessarily the same as her father. I think she's much more long-term thinking. I think she decided not to challenge the Marcoses in this race so that she can have her own time 6 years down the road, or who knows, earlier or later, depending on how Marcoses handle their return to power, most likely return to power. So there's going to be a lot of competition there. But, you know, Sara Duterte also has this kind of strong woman persona, very similar to her father. At the same time, from what I understand, on the ground in Davao, where she has been a mayor for a long time, she's much more, let's say, consultative. She's much more open to discussion with experts, scientists, social scientists. So in some ways, she's much more modern version of her father. But at the end of the day, she's Duterte. She represents that authoritarian populist brand. And the Marcoses are also, of course, a known commodity in that line.
Yes. Look, this week, the ABC's Foreign Correspondent Program aired an episode on the Filipino election. Here's a clip from a recent Marcos Jr. rally, which I think probably does capture some of what you're sort of getting at, where thousands of supporters turned up to see him.
Marcos have done something that people would disagree, but there are still a lot of positives. So for me, that's the reason why I'm still supporting Bongbong. Why not give it a try, right?
So, you know, despite the terrible record of him and his wife, Ferdinand Marcos Sr. and his wife stealing, you know, between 10 and 20 billion, it's estimated from the Filipino people, and just that sort of deterioration of all the democratic norms. Is there a makeover underway? People have forgotten that or what? Have they died and is their children voting?
Right. I mean, the thing is this. I'm not very comfortable with the liberal cliche that this is all about suddenly Filipino people forgetting the past. I think it's much more complicated than that. I mean, indeed, this is what, I mean, my book on Duterte was explaining why Duterte became the next president. I think those structural elements are still there. Yes, I think a lot of Filipinos, especially 55 and above, who still want the Dutertes, they're nostalgic for a supposed golden past. They're suddenly romanticizing the past precisely because of their frustration with the present. I mean, for heaven's sake, I mean, the Marcoses are running for top offices, not just Bongbong Marcos, but practically the whole family, even though all of them have been facing cases right and left. The fact that they can run, that tells you a lot about the complete absence of rule of law in the Philippines. So yes, elections, democratic elections were reintroduced back in 1986 onwards. That is true. But goodness, what kind of democracy did we get? The Philippine Congress, 70 to 90%, if I count the outside the wedlock kids of our politicians, are dominated by political dynasties. 40 richest families took home 76% of newly created growth in recent years. You talk to an average Filipino, they don't feel this is a democracy. They feel at best this is a liberal oligarchy. And that is what allowed Duterte to win power in 2016. And that is what allowed the Marcoses to make people forget about their crimes, their shortcomings 40, 50 years ago, by making people focus on the shortcomings of the system in the past 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, right? And Bongbong Marcos, interestingly, even has deferred on Duterte on certain issues. For instance, on the war on drugs, he said he wants it to be much more surgical, more rehabilitation driven. So the Marcoses are getting all the benefits from their alliance with the Dutertes, but they're also making some tactical divergence in terms of their policy positioning. Not to mention, Marcos Jr. is very different from his father. I think he's more like his mother than his father. He has this kind of avuncular charm. He almost has a K-pop look if you look at his TikTok and social media kind of positioning. So he has tried to have the cake and eat it too, have the strongman legacy of his dad, at the same time projecting this cool avuncular and anodyne image, and it seems to be working. It seems to be working.
Well, what does that say about yearnings inside, which you've also looked at, yearnings inside the populace for a sort of order by the sound of what you're talking about, you know, make Philippines great and orderly again. Is that what's underway slightly?
Right. Of course, the voter demographic is extremely diverse, right? So some demographic are voting based on ethnic lines, right? So I come from the North Ilocos, where the Marcoses come from. And I know a lot of our distant relatives, at least, right, are voting for Marcos just because he's one of us, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of thinking, that tribalistic mindset. And then if you look at it along different lines, let's say socioeconomic class, so among the masses, let's call it, a lot of them are not invested in ideas like human rights and democracy and due process. Those are too abstract for them. They want their roads properly made. They want basic services delivered on time. And they didn't get that with reformist administrations to the degree that they expected it. So there's a lot of frustration. Duterte has come short, so they're saying maybe we need a much younger, more efficient version of a strongman, and maybe that's Bongbong Marcos. Now, if you talk up to the upper classes of the Philippines, it gets even more interesting. I think they're in the grip of what I call Singapore envy. You know, Lee Kuan Yew, the authoritarian leader of Singapore, is cited right and left by the more educated Filipinos. And the message is very clear. You want to be like Singapore? We need an authoritarian leader. We don't need dysfunctional democracy. What we need is a disciplinarian. So even the upper classes Filipinos, the more educated Filipinos, a lot of them have been gravitating towards Duterte. 44% went for Duterte in 2016. And latest surveys suggest up to 60% could go to the Marcos and Duterte tandem in these elections. So the middle class, which was behind the two people power revolutions in 1986 and the less publicized version in 2001, they're tired. They didn't get their They got the short end of the stick. That's their understanding. Now they're going for something radically different. And in this case, radically different is back to the future.
And finally, what would a Marcos presidency mean for the region?
Right. I'm not going to push the panic button yet, right? Obviously, I'm not the most optimistic guy when it comes to the future of democracy in the Philippines. We have been in this quagmire for quite some time. I've been warning right and left about trend lines on the ground. Many in the opposition seem to be caught in their own fantasies. They think politics is a fairy tale and now they're going to have a rude awakening soon, unfortunately. Now, speaking about Philippines' place in the region, the Philippines is in a very geopolitically important spot, right? It has a treaty alliance with America. It has status of forces agreement with Australia. It's trying to negotiate defense agreements with Japan and other like-minded countries. But under President Duterte, it has gravitated towards China too simultaneously. We have disputes with China. U.S. wants to help us, but Duterte has not been willing to let Americans help us because he wants to keep that friendship with China. Now, if Bongbong Marcos wins, he wants to keep certain level of friendship with China. But my contention is Marcos is not Duterte on the foreign policy front necessarily. You know, he's a product of the West. He never graduated from anything, as far as I know, but he went to Wharton. He went to Oxford. His son studied, I think, in Eton. His wife claims to have passed the bar in New York. The Marcoses are the old new rich. They want to be part of the Western high society. So I think there's a lot of point for engagement with them in ways that Duterte's were never open to. So I think if the Biden administration, if our counterparts in Australia, around the world, engage the Marcos administration on a calibrated basis, they can prevent the Philippines sliding further into the Chinese orbit, as we have seen under President Duterte.
Very interesting. Well, Richard, we'll watch with even greater interest. Thank you very much for joining us from a very busy schedule I know that you have.
Pleasure, as always, Geraldine.
Richard Haderian, based in Manila and often in Washington, D.C., his latest book is The Indo-Pacific, Trump, China and the New Struggle for Global Mastery, published in 2019.